T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News, a lot to talk about when it comes to is this a must-win for the Milwaukee Bucks? Sean Devaney now joins us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Sean, we haven't seen them stack success against a team over 500 all season long. Why should we believe if they lose this when they have a shot at coming back and winning the series?
It's a good point, and certainly with this team, they seem to be a fragile bunch. It doesn't take much to send them spiraling downward. So I think coming back home down 2-0, I think it'd be hard for them to bounce back from that. I think that there was enough opportunity there in game one that they should have taken advantage. If they get the same chances this time around, then they don't win, I think it's mentally going to be hard for them to bounce back from that.
So tell me something, because I'm reading and listening to all the national stuff, and everybody felt that this is the most talented team and that the Bucks should win this thing without Kyrie Irving and company, and as banged up as Boston is, that the Bucks should win this series. I'm sitting here today, 20 miles away from the Bradley Center, and I don't see it that way. This is a team that just doesn't understand how to win consistently. I would go back to that Denver game, and they threw the game away up by a couple of, with 3 seconds left. It doesn't make sense to me. This team has to figure out how to win. I guess my question to you is, why is everybody picking the Bucks, and how can they eventually figure out how to win?
Yeah, Bill, I pick Boston because
you and me.
What you said. Yeah, I because I really think that the Bucks, and this might sound harsh, but I think if you watch them long enough, then you'd agree they're a dumb team. They don't play smart. They play dumb basketball, and you see it time and time again where they don't take advantage when they have mismatches. They don't find ways to give themselves easy buckets. The turnovers that they had in game one were just they were lazy and they were careless, and they have played like that especially I think in the last half of this year. It really does seem like this is a team that once things started to go bad under Jason Kidd, and they fired Jason Kidd, and you hit the All-Star break, they seem to have checked out, and if you can't rally it together in the playoffs and get excited for this when you've got an opportunity to move on to the second round, something that you haven't done in a long, long time. I think that you have to hope that that these guys would seize that opportunity. But like I say, they've been so uninspired in the last 2-3 months. I don't see them suddenly getting inspired now.
What about this Celtics team? Let me ask you this: how much does Brad Stevens and coaching and X's and O's mean to this team? Because we talk about all the time about good and bad coaches in the NBA and guys that can rein it in. But what has Brad Stevens meant to this team?
Yeah, and I think sometimes his value gets overstated, but I think in a series like this, you really do see what he does, and I think it starts the defense. They have a very coherent defensive strategy every time down. If you look at it, I know Giannis had the big numbers, but they made him work. They made things difficult on him on the defensive end, that was part of the plan. Is they understand he's going to score. But they're going to have Al Horford try to handle him one-on-one as much as they can. They have a coherent plan. That's something that you can always count on with Stevens. Trying to find ways to juggle a very limited roster right now. Because if you look at it, basically Marcus Morris is a starter. They start Aaron Baines, but he only plays, maybe about 15 minutes a game. Pretty much they go Tatum, Horford, Morris, Brown, and Rozier. And that's it. They don't have a whole lot else. They got 6 points from everybody. They scored what was it, 113, and they got 6 points from everybody outside of those five guys. That's he's able to juggle a very limited amount of talent, and like you said, the Bucks have more talent, but I think Stevens has made such a big difference.
Giannis and Chris Middleton, they combined for over 60 points in the first game, and quite a few boards as well. Who's this game rely upon for the Milwaukee Bucks? I don't think Giannis can do any more. So is this all Bledsoe and, say, Jabari Parker? I mean, is this those two guys are the ones that have to step up to make this thing go?
Yeah, you know, I think certainly Bledsoe is the guy who could make a big difference here. You know, I think they're reluctant to put Parker in there for too long because of the defense and the holes that that presents. So yeah, I do think you know, you'd like to get Tony Snell going a little bit. You know, if he can knock down a couple of shots and give you give you 8 to 10 points, that would be a big help. But I think Bledsoe's probably the difference maker here. That he was terrible, and you know, he should be the first one to admit it. Not just that final play, you know, he sort of gave up on the 3-pointer to Rozier to give the Celtics a 3-point lead there. But really, the whole game, you know, 5 turnovers in the game, you know, just didn't play well. So you know, I think he's the guy who can kind of be the X factor here that they didn't have, who can help them close that gap.
How much do they need to kind of control Horford? And I'm saying this in all genuineness because Horford's a guy that's a beast on the boards. To me, some of the second chance points he got, some of the rebounds, the assist, and then addition to that, for the Bucks not crashing the boards offensively, I mean, when you're talking about a team that shoots the two more than they shoot the three, way more than they shoot the three, this is a team that kind of stands around. You got one shot going up, 4 guys standing around looking at it, and they don't do anything to really get in and get themselves some of those dirty boards. And Horford's that guy. I mean, I said in the beginning of the series, and people thought I was crazy, I thought the big series, the guy that could be the MVP of the series could be Al Horford.
Yeah, and certainly he was fantastic in game one. And you're right. You know, one thing about the Bucks, and this has been a complaint about them that I've had, is you're right. They don't shoot the three. They don't have a lot of 3-point shooters. I think when you are doing that, then offensive rebounds become more important. But they're so one thing that Jason Kidd did when he was the head coach was he made them really petrified of giving up fast break points. And because of that, you see guys when the shot goes up, they're already lingering backwards and trying to get back because they put such an emphasis on trying to limit fast break points for the other team. And you know, that's an okay strategy, I think, if you're a good shooting team. When you have a high shot percentage, then you can, then, you know, you can play to shut down the fast break because chances are you're going to score. You're going to be, the other team's going to be taking it out and not turning around. So, you know, I do think that, that is a problem. I don't see them changing that, though. That's been their strategy the whole time. But I do think that's something they could take better advantage of.
What is your ear telling you as far as rumors or innuendos go about what the Bucks coaching search might look like after the season culminates?
Yeah, you know, I obviously I think they want to go big. You know, I don't think that they want to, obviously going into a new building and with a guy like Giannis on board, you know, you've got to get this turned around. They've got the talent. I think they've been willing to pay for the talent. I think they've got to pay for a coach. So, you know, we'll see what happens with Doc Rivers, for instance. You know, maybe a Monty Williams, you know, somebody who has some credentials, somebody who's done something in the league already. I think that that's what they're going to be looking for. And they know they'll probably have to pay a little extra, but I think that these owners will be willing to do that, especially, like I say, they need to create some buzz. They need to get this thing going in a positive direction heading into next year. And I think that you know, it's much easier to spend that money on a coach than it is to try to find ways to do it on the payroll, especially with how packed their payroll already is.
Well, I was going to ask you this, because coming up in the next season, or this offseason, maybe I should say, is the fact that you've got a lot of Bucks contracts that just aren't good. So my question to you is this: how do they get, is there going to be a capability to really unbury themselves from some of these contracts for some of these guys that are going to be here for quite some time?
No, it's going to be tough because if you look around, you know, what happened, Bill, is we had the two seasons where you had the TV money coming in, right? And we saw some crazy spending in the NBA, and we saw it across the board. And so you have a lot of these contracts now that things have leveled off and there is no new TV money, teams are just dealing with, the normal progression of payroll and salary and things like that. You know, you can't, all of a sudden you don't have this big windfall anymore. And they're all stuck with these contracts, mostly going into next year, some going into 2020, that, you know, it's going to be tough to get rid of. And you know, so the Bucks are not alone in that. And it's not really a situation where they can just dump some contracts. You know, who's going to take a Dellavedova, right? I don't think there's anybody out there, who's going to take, you know, a Toledovich, or John Henson even. And these guys aren't in the stratosphere of some of the contracts that were given out, but they're sitting there in their bad contracts. I don't think there's much you can do except sit back and just wait for them to come off the books.
Yeah, you've got $18 million still owed to Henson, almost $9 million a year for the next 2 years. I don't know how you're going to get rid of some of that money. Sean, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. We appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon, okay?
Okay, thanks, Bill.
All right, buddy, talk to you later. There goes Sean Devaney, NBA writer for the Sporting News, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.